And it's the roundtable portion of the show, and happy to have with us Tom Withers from the Associated Press and Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram and Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon-Journal. Guys, we'll start with this. The Pittsburgh Steelers come to town, and they look familiar, Tom, with that number one ranked defense. Not so familiar with the quarterback.
They kind of look like the 2005 Steelers, don't they, coming in? Plaxico yeah. Burress is back. Charlie Batch is back. So, yeah, very kind of a new old-look Steelers team. I'm just hoping they don't bring those uniforms with them they wore last week.
Or maybe they do. Maybe those are bad luck for them.
They
warm in a loss to buy. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's, as you mentioned, really though, Vic, I mean, either. There's still that defense out there, and you know, we'll see if they have some other parts back. You know, Polamalu's missed a couple games with that right calf injury. So they're still a handful.
Scott, Charlie Batch at quarterback, 15 years in the league, 37 years old. I mean, those numbers usually speak to a guy who's out of football, but he's there, and the argument could be made that he might be the better backup than Byron Leftwich. And I hear people say this, that everyone sort of – well, I say everyone. A lot of people agree with that, except for the Steelers coaches or Mike Tomlin, who had him buried third on the depth chart.
Well, I was going to say there must be a reason that he was third behind Leftwich. But, you know, I know what you're saying, and I know what these people are saying. Batch brings a lot of leadership, a lot of experience. His record as a starter, even in his prime, was pretty good. It's right around 500.
Yeah.
He's won games with the Steelers. He beat the Browns with the Steelers a few years ago. So – I think it'd be – obviously, it's a benefit for the Browns that Roethlisberger isn't playing. But they can't sleep on Charlie Batch because, as we saw last week, Leftwich did not do anything against the Ravens, and they're still in that game right up until the end. So the Browns can't take him lightly for sure.
He makes that 31-yard touchdown run. I still don't know how he did that against the Ravens.
He
probably doesn't know how he did it. But, Nate, and Scott mentions this, there's no going to sleep on anybody for the Browns. They can't afford to do that. But to think about that secondary, which gets healthier with Joe Hayden's return, and what a difference we would presume that would make. But this is the same secondary that, without Hayden, and just a week ago, gives up more than 300 yards, gets flagged 7 times for penalties against the Cowboys.
Yeah, they can't take anyone for granted because they have too many issues of their own. And, you know, Hayden comes back. That's obviously a huge boost, but still, Buster Skrine suffered that concussion against the Cowboys. We don't know if he's going to be playing Sunday. And Dimitri Patterson, he said he was going to try to test that ankle that's kept him out for the past 5 weeks. But we don't know if he's going to be playing either. So that's still two of your top four corners who potentially are going to be out. The secondary has a lot to atone for after those 7 penalties. And, you know, obviously Joe Hayden will help. But, again, I mean, it's still fair to call it an injury-riddled secondary.
Tom, how concerned should the Browns be about the secondary? I want to say the depth, but just the fact that we know all those – could all of those flags have been legit? The argument would likely be no. Okay, we know that. But there were some flags that were.
Yep.
There was aggressive play that was there.
Yep.
There was – usually when you get those kinds of penalties, it's a sign of desperation. It's, you know, that you physically can't maybe keep up with or handle who you're covering. So where does it leave us just looking at the secondary in general?
You know, I guess you could say that it's probably thinner than it should be. You know, the Hayden situation has been an issue all year. We've talked about that ad nauseum. They're 0-5 without him. Obviously, you can't go on without your best defensive player, arguably. You know, some of these young guys, it's learning by fire. I mean, we had a long talk with Dimitri Patterson on Monday, who talked to us about how tough it is to play that position. And I think sometimes we do take that for granted. I think also what we saw Sunday was some of these young guys having to learn that you got to keep your hands off these guys, but how tough that can be when you're 15 yards down the field and the offensive guy grabs you by the jersey. So, it's, you know, obviously it's thinner than it should be, Vic, but, you know, again, it's a young group, you know, learning as they go along.
And what can help, of course, the secondary is what it got in help last week, which was a pass rush. 7 sacks of Tony Romo in that game. Clearly a difference made with the Tabor Rubin lined up next to Phil Taylor. I mean, we all knew that would be a big thing, Scott, but it's in many more ways than one a big thing. But we now see what that pressure, what the result can be in regard to pressure, because it looked like the ends – the outside folks really stepped up their game. Jabal Sheard, Frosty Rucker, Jaquay Parker played that much better than we've seen them play.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I've been looking for that kind of game from Jabal Sheard all season. 8.5 sacks as a rookie, and he was so close for the first 8 or 9 games. It looked like he was half a step away 6 times a game, and he finally got there. He got there against the Ravens before the bye. He got there against the Cowboys. Pressure the rest of the time. Frosty Rucker played one of his better games on the other side. And I'll tell you what, Jaquay Parker has been overlooked all season as a free agent signee, you know, one of the few guys that Heckert brought in, but has made an impact. He's out there on most of the nickel situations, gets a lot of pressure, strong guy, pulled down Romo by the jersey. So I think after that game, we look around and we say, you know what, this defensive line goes about 8 deep, and it's pretty solid.
It's the roundtable of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got Tom Withers and Scott Patrick and Nate Ulrich and yours truly, Vic Carucci, here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nate, is the other part of this is the linebackers benefiting from what was happening up front. The guys on the edge is one thing, but to see Craig Robertson, you know, make plays, to see a defense that when it was blitzing, when those linebackers were sent, and even when they did some things in coverage, that looked like it gave problems to Tony Romo and in general to that Cowboy passing game.
Yeah, and I asked Pat Shurmur. I think there's this assumption that, you know, Reuben and Taylor demand so many double teams that it frees up guys, whether it's an end or a linebacker. And I think there might be something to that in some scenarios, but he mentioned just the way that they can collapse the pocket is really what makes the biggest difference. And I think that, you know, hey, the Browns went through the first 9 games without their 2 starting defensive tackles next to each other. That was the first time we saw it, Reuben and Taylor together. So I think it made a huge difference for the linebackers, for the, you know, for Craig Robertson, like you said, get it in there. He actually had 1 sack, I think, nullified.
Yes. So he could have had another penalty. Two in the
so,
game.
Yeah, he That's had right. a huge day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was definitely encouraging because we've seen him play well in pass coverage. He's been serving as that nickel linebacker, so to speak. But to see him bring another, you know, dimension to the game with that pass rush, that was very encouraging.
And look, the other reason that Tony Romo ends up throwing 50 times is because 50. I still am staggered by that number. But he throws that many times because they didn't establish any kind of a running game against the Browns. The Browns wouldn't allow that. So that front seven, those linemen, those linebackers did a superb job there. They're going to have to be every bit that and more. With a Steelers, you cannot let the Steelers get a running game going when you know that that's what they'll lean on to help Charlie Batchelor.
No, and if you get a 13-0 lead, Vic, you got to go for the jugular. I think that had a lot to do with Tony Romo throwing 50 times as well, Eli Manning did earlier this year.
Right.
He had to throw himself back into the game. So, you know, just what Scott and Nate have been saying as well, this team cannot afford a letdown. I think naturally as an athlete, you would probably look over there and say, hey, it's Charlie Batch. We probably got it a little easier this week, but they can't afford a letdown. They cannot lose to this team at home this week.
Yeah, it's the Steelers. I keep hearing this possibility of some sort of, well, they're going to take.
Yeah.
You're 2-8. You take no one lightly. You can't even remotely think of that. So I hope that that isn't even a minuscule thought on this team, Scott.
No, I'm with you. I mean, the Browns are, I think it's 1-16 against the Steelers in the last 17. I mean, how do you have any confidence at all, let alone overcome? Confidence.
No,
you know, and they're going to be able to run. And the Steelers have been able to run the ball all year, even with a bad offensive line.
Right.
So this is a great test for Taylor and Reuben.
And they will get that. I mean, they'll be persistent with it. You know how Mike Tomlin's going to come into this game. Meanwhile, we let's talk about this Steeler defense, which ranked first overall, first against the pass, fourth against the run, against this Browns offense. That do we think, Nate, that Brandon Whedon, you know, redeemed himself somewhat, mostly for that Baltimore game? It was an up-and-down performance against Dallas, but better. I mean, 2 touchdown passes and no picks. Looked like overall he was moving in the right – the needle moved up again.
Yeah, I think it did a little. It wasn't quite the bounce back that I think week 2 was after week 1 against the Eagles. But, you know, he didn't throw an interception. So,
that's
you know,
good.
And he flirted with it, certainly. Right. But Pat Shurmur was – pretty much pounding the table saying no interceptions, he didn't do it. So that obviously helped. But and I think the thing about Whedon in that game is he threw what he thought, and I think a lot of the Browns players thought, was a game-winning touchdown to Benjamin Watson with, I think, 107 left in the fourth quarter. So, that was a big moment. And I think there are a lot of good things he can take. But, you know, obviously, like you said, it was up and down. It was kind of like his entire season. It was a roller coaster ride.
And, you know, I think, Vic, along those lines, this has got to be a bounce back for Trent Richardson, I think, this week. Not that 95 yards is anything to snivel about, but, you know, he didn't have the second half that they need.
Right.
And if this team is going to be, you know, based around Trent Richardson, well, now's the time to do it. You know, they drafted him third for a reason.
Yep.
They're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. It's time to show up.
No question about it. Now, how about this time? We know the Steelers haven't been hardly prolific. They haven't been prolific at all in taking the ball away defensively, and that's not characteristic of them. But that said, it's Dick LeBeau. Yeah, and
they're going to find a way to.
They're going to find a way to certainly make the life of a rookie quarterback miserable. And I just wonder how Brandon Whedon handles that challenge.
Well, you know, we're going to find out a lot more about him again this week. And I agree with Nate. I thought there was a lot of positives that came out of last week's games. I was a little concerned, though, and Scott and I always talk about how guys throw the ball. You know, he was high and wild. I mean, he was missing the strike zone quite a bit on Sunday. So I don't know if that was a mechanics problem. I don't know if he was a little too jacked up because he had a lot of family and friends there from Oklahoma. So, yeah, I think, you know, they're going to find ways. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers defense. They're going to find ways to bring heat on him, and he's going to have to be able to adjust.
And the offensive line, Scott, as we saw, protected him very well against an outstanding pass-rushing Cowboys team. That's DeMarcus Ware, right, and Anthony Spencer. So they can come at you, and they did, but I thought the Browns did a really good job. What is it, just two sacks, and he really hardly got touched on many occasions. Can you see that group doing the same against Pittsburgh?
I can, just because they've done it all year. Mm-hmm. I think it's maybe seven sacks in the last 7 weeks. Yep. And that's impressive because the Browns are throwing the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And Whedon, I mean, there were times in the first half where he had five, 6 seconds, could survey the whole field. You know, I think it's an interesting matchup with Pittsburgh because they don't let you run the ball against them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to balance, do we pound our heads against the wall and run Richardson for 2 yards a pop over and over and over, or do we spread him out a little bit, go three wides, throw the ball, and make him loosen up, and then you hit Richardson later? And I think that's been successful against Pittsburgh in the past, and I think it might work again.
Nate, what do you gauge from the locker room? I still see a team that's players are still engaged, still kind of connected with this whole idea of getting better, of feeling like what they do in games matters even if there's losses.
Yeah, I sense that too. I mean, they're 2-8. It's been a pretty dismal year all around. I mean, there's no real easy way to say it. When you're 2-8, you're 2-8.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been bright spots, and, you know, in certain areas, but overall, it's been a very disappointing season. But this team is so young, and I've said it before, and I really do believe it, that these guys stay positive, I think, unlike a lot of locker rooms would.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that shows up in all these close games. I mean, they could have packed it in at the bye, but, man, they went to Dallas in that environment and really should have, you know,
should've
potentially
come out of there
won.
With a win.
But, you know, so many chances.
A lot of shoulda.
So many chances and right. Just didn't finish.
It's the Roundtable. Guys, thank you so much. Tom Withers, the Associated Press. We've got Scott Patrick, Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal. Gentlemen, appreciate it. We will reconvene next week on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Much more is coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.